Welcome to the Kinky Cast, a sexually explicit podcast for adults. You are listening to a weekly publication, produced every Friday morning. The Kinky Cast is heard in over 150 countries. This is our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Today, we present episode 283, The Primal Show with Ark. Don't forget to stop by our webpage for information about this show and others. KinkyCast.com. Here's your host, Woody.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Hey, listeners, I just wanted to remind you to go to KinkyCast.com for a lot more episodes than you can find on your podcast players. The entire archive is there, KinkyCast.com. On the line with me is Ark, all the way from Tallahassee, Florida. How are you?
Doing fine.
All right. We have brought you onto the show, kicking and screaming, because you identify as a primal player.
Yes, that's right.
And you teach primal classes like at Frolicon.
I do. Normally, I teach classes on energy play and introductory primal play. We leave some of the more nuanced and more area-specialized classes to some of the other presenters. But apparently I'm pretty good at talking to people who are fairly new to the kink.
That is good, because I'm looking at this as kind of a 101 podcast. People that have heard about primal, they've maybe not experienced another primal player. And so what would one expect? Let's say we're in a public play space and there's a couple primal players going at it in the corner. What would I expect?
It's going to depend very heavily on the play space that you're in, whether or not the play space is set up for safe primal play, or better phrased, set up for physical primal play. If it is, you're going to see mats on the floor. You're going to possibly see a padded wall. And you're going to see people engaging in a physical space on the mats. It's going to look like rough body play. It's going to potentially look like wrestling. It's going to be very, very movement oriented, very, very physical play. If the space is not set up to do that sort of play safely, it's normally going to be a much softer kind of play. It's going to be much more focused, much more quiet in between two people. It's going to be two people who are engaging in a communication that is not necessarily verbal. It's going to, you might not even notice that it's going on unless you're sitting and paying attention to the two people doing it.
So I may see a couple engaged in anything from a wrestling night to a sensual power exchange.
Yes. The thing about primal play is that primal play is itself more of a descriptor of how you play than a descriptor of what you're doing. If I say that I'm a rigger, then people know that I play with rope and that I am probably going to be looking to tie somebody into a pretzel. If I say that I am a primal player, all you really know from that descriptor is that I am someone who engages in visceral play, where you're trying to grind away the hidebound kind of rules that make people people. And you're trying to go to a more base state where you are interacting and reacting with a partner. Most of the time, I say most of the time, the power exchange that's going to happen in primal play is going to be fluid. It's going to be power moving back and forth between two people, as opposed to a more traditional power exchange where a bottom of some flavor gives power to a top. Some people call that power, power give, power exchange. Primal to me is much more of a consensual power take. I am consenting to you trying to take my power. By that same virtue, you are also consenting to me trying to take your power. And it's that motion back and forth between the two players that really makes a primal scene primal.
And I guess there's noises that go with that.
It depends on the player. I mean, the many primal players will growl, they will snarl, they will bite, they will claw, they will The thing that you have to remember is that one of the things that the primal player is trying to do is to shut off as much of the person as they can. And a very person thing to do is to talk. You're not going to hear a whole lot of talking in a primal scene, specifically because, at least for some primal players, that part of the brain isn't really functioning. It's going to be much more of, if there are vocalized communications, it's going to be much more feral or animalistic. You might hear somebody growl out a no or a yes, but you're not going to be talking about Socrates while you're rolling around on the mats. One of many things to remember with primal play is it involves a headspace change for a lot of the players. And it's a headspace that's different from subspace. It's different from quote-unquote dom space. It is a headspace all its own. But for many of the people who are doing that kind of play, when that headspace shifts, they will forget how to talk. They will not remember that they can stand up on 2 feet. They may forget, and it's kind of funny when someone does forget, that they have thumbs and they try to pick up a glass of water. But that headspace shift impacts how you perceive what's going on and how you communicate pretty heavily.
In some of the play that I've seen, the noises are screams of pain, screams of pleasure with the head shut off.
Yes, that can be very, very accurate. You will hear screams, you will hear growls, you will hear snarls, you may hear some vocalizations depending on the player of yes, no, maybe. It is something that you should always discuss before you start shifting into that headspace with the person that you're getting ready to play with, what that headspace shifts looks like for you, so that they can be aware of, is this person going to be able to say stop if I've done something that is causing them physical harm? You know, is this person going to be able to maintain enough of the person to tap on my shoulder if they can't breathe? Is this person going to be able to look at me and say no if I try to take their pants off? Also good to know is, am I going to be able to understand them when they do those things? When you're shutting off those parts of the brain, sometimes the parts of the brain that understand some of the more human things go with it. You might become very, very in tune with body language where you are not necessarily in tune with the words that are coming out of someone's mouth. I would always, always, always advise someone who is new to primal play to find some type of event where it is either primal focused or there are a lot of primal players and a lot of primal play happening, and try it for the first time with a group of people watching so that you know how you're going to react and you have other people there, for lack of better terms, as spotters, so that if something starts going sideways, they can intervene before it becomes a problem, and they can intervene in a way where no one gets hurt. That's one of the big hallmarks of a lot of the primal play events, is there is a whole community of primals that tends to watch the primal scenes happen. There are lots of eyes. There are lots of people watching for dangerous situations to arise so that no one gets hurt. Because from the outside looking in, a lot of primal play can appear very, 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 very physical. It can appear violent. It can appear like two or more people are operating in almost a barely controlled way. But a lot of that is, for lack of better terms, window dressing on what's actually going on in the scene. And what is really going on in the scene is a dialogue between two individuals not using words. It's a dialogue. And sometimes that dialogue will take the form of a violent interaction, people pushing each other around, pinning each other down. It could be, you know, a communication that takes the form of, I'm the big wolf on the mountain, try and knock me off. If you think you're hard enough, come at me. It can also be I really like you, you feel good to be around, and I want to be as physically close to you as I can be. There are six functional primal drives, the four Fs, the N, and the R. And those are fight and flight, feed and fuck, nest and rest. A primal scene is going to have at least one of those needs being fulfilled within that scene. Of those needs, well, sure, fighting is violent. Fucking can be violent, though it doesn't have to be. Feeding can be violent, though it doesn't have to be. If you're nesting or resting in a violent way, I kind of want to see it happen because I never have. And that would seem to me to be kind of antithetical to the need that you're trying to fulfill.
You nest and you rest until you feel like fucking and feeding again.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of those things. It is one of the things that I really like about primal play is almost anything that you do can be done in a primal way. The important thing is that you're looking at the base drive, whether it's I really need to come, or I really need to feed, or I really want to take a nap, or I really don't like this person, I want to punch him in the mouth, or I really like this person and I want to punch him in the mouth for that matter. Anything that you do can be done in a primal way. Now, some of the best scenes that I've had are very, very quiet. It is not big emotion. It's not people throwing each other around. And don't get me wrong, that stuff is fun. It's a lot of fun, especially if you're big and you're strong, to pick somebody up and move them through space while they're trying to stop you from moving through space. There is something absolutely wonderful about taking control of a scene when there is active resistance to you exercising that control and knowing that that's okay, knowing that that is the sandbox that everybody is playing in. But some of the best scenes are the quiet scenes where you're engaged with a partner and you don't have to talk and you just move together, you breathe together, you exist in space together. And you stop being individuals and you exist as one thing in the space that you've created.
I'm hot. Yeah. I had just gone through a number of scenes that I've had that actually hit a lot of those marks. The nonverbal communication is probably the thing that I enjoy the most, because when you have a partner that you've played with a lot and you don't have to negotiate or anything like that, and it's just raw passion that is going back and forth, is so incredibly hot.
That is exactly kind of what I'm driving at. Primal play is visceral. It's blood and bone and guts and it's if you're scripting it, in my opinion, at least, you're not really taking full advantage. You mentioned negotiation, and that is something that is important in every scene. With primal play, I find that a sandbox theory of negotiation works, and it goes kind of something like this: we have a bunch of toys. Whether it's the toys may be rope, the toys may be biting, clawing, fucking, whatever your toys are. And those toys are either in the sandbox or they're out of the sandbox. And the primal negotiation is all about what toys are in the sandbox for that interaction. And that's where you have your informed consent within your primal scene is everybody knows the toys that are in the sandbox. And the toys that are not in the sandbox, they don't come in the sandbox during that scene. Toys can always leave the sandbox. You know, you're wrestling around with somebody and you feel, you feel like you pull your knee. You don't necessarily want to stop the scene, but maybe you want to stop with the rough body part of the scene. Yeah, you can, of course, say, look, you know, my knee just went, let's keep going, but let's stay away from that.
Leave the knee out of it.
Yeah. That's perfectly fine, but like with any other type of play where headspace shifts occur, trying to add things in once you start playing with endorphins, once you start playing with headspace shifts, that just becomes incredibly dangerous. on many, many levels. The last thing that I think anybody should want to do is to violate someone else's consent. And one of the quickest ways to violate someone else's consent is to start trying to negotiate for extra stuff once a scene has started, especially if somebody has pulled their judgment out of the picture, because judgment is one of those very human functions. And if you've taken that out of the equation, somebody who's just reacting on, this feels really good, you're my preferred sexual archetype, and this feels really good, and I don't want to stop what we're doing, even though outside of that space, they're in a dynamic where that's not okay. You can very, very quickly cause rippling problems if you add things in that weren't okay when it all starts. One of the worst things that I hear all the time about primal players is that primal players are out of control consent violators. And that is not true if you're talking about responsible primal players. Just because you're shutting off the people doesn't give you an excuse to be a dick. It just doesn't. At the end of the day, no matter how many of the governors you pull off the truck, the rules still apply. And those rules are real simple. You know, don't touch what isn't yours. Don't do what you don't have consent to do. Don't take advantage of somebody else's vulnerable mental state to get something that they wouldn't give you if their mental state was fully operational.
Reaching for stuff that's outside the sandbox.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I like the sandbox analogy because for a good primal scene, I think is very, very unscripted. You know, if you're in a more traditional scene, I don't know, an impact scene, you know, it may be first I'm going to warm you up with this flogger, then I'm going to move to this flogger, then I'm going to move to this flogger, then we're going to go to the chains, then we're going to go to the whips, then we're going to go to the dragon tail, and then I'm going to rub you with a bunny mitt to cool your back off. And that's how that scene goes. It's one thing after another. It's planned out.
And it's predictable to a large degree.
Yes. And there is not saying that there's anything wrong with that style of play at all. But to me, that feels very, very scripted, very, very restricted. I would much rather look at a partner and say, okay, we're going to play. Can we play with ropes? Can we play with impact? Can we play with, you know, clips, clamps? Can we play with blades? Can we play with biting? Can we play with claws? Can we play with sex? Can we play with whatever? Find out the things that are okay to play with, find out the things that are not okay to play with, and then enter into the scene going, these are my tools. I don't know what I'm going to do with my tools, but I know where my lines are. I know where my box is. And anything that I want to do within the box as the scene morphs and develops and the energy shifts and flows and the power shifts and flows, everybody is fine with anything that's in the box happening. And that's kind of the functional difference to me between a primal scene and a more standard DS scene or S&M scene or what have you.
I certainly agree with what you're saying. The one thing I'd want to expand on, you mentioned sex. Like any good negotiation, you want to break that out. And is it oral? Is it vaginal? What are you agreeing to and what are you not agreeing to? Because some people may just say, well, sex is fine, but no anal.
Yes, I would absolutely agree. And one of the, I don't want to use the word misconceptions, but one of the errors in thought about primal play is that if you're engaging in primal play, you have to consent to what the predator wants. If you identify as prey, the predator gets to do whatever they want to you, and you're prey, so you have to take it.
And that's not true for anything in the BDSM world that we know about.
You are absolutely right. That trope is often thrown out by people who want to say that every woman is prey and every man is a predator. And all that is an abusive asshole trying to be abusive. That is not what primal play is about. It is not what is encouraged within the primal play community. And it is something that we do our best to call out when it happens, because that kind of thinking is damaging to all of us. You know, it makes everyone look bad. When you're dealing with Primal, which is a fairly new style of fairly new identifier of a style of play. And where it's a very, very big umbrella, there's lots and lots of ways people do Primal. There's lots and lots of people who identify as Primal. We are very much in an area of kink where one bad apple will taint all of us. And, you know, it is the last thing that I want anyone to think is that just because they like to turn off their person and exist in a raw, untrammeled, unfettered state means that they have to take whatever somebody else wants to dish out. That is simply not true. And I hope, if nothing else, that coming out of this podcast, that is a lesson that everyone walks away with.
So then let's go back to what you said earlier. If you want to experience primal play, either as a top or a bottom, predator or prey, go to a primal event and do it with other people that know the ropes. The ropes in this case is primal play. And they can act as a protective barrier to make sure that the top doesn't get out of control and to make sure that the bottom isn't in distress.
Yes, I would agree with about 85% of that. And where I have the slight bit of disagreement is in your use of the label predator and prey. A primal predator is a very particular kind of primal. Primal prey is a very particular kind of primal. I would say that the majority of primal players don't use either one of those appellations, whether they are a top or whether they are a bottom. I tend to be a top. I identify as a primal. I do not identify as a primal predator. The majority of people who identify as primal predators are tops. They tend to be looking for a particular experience, and that particular label tells you the experience that they're looking for. They are looking to hunt and conquer something. Primal prey tend to be bottoms. Most of the primal prey, they are looking for a particular experience. That experience is to be hunted, to be captured, to be conquered. There is nothing wrong with walking in and knowing that that's what you want and saying, this is what I want. This is the experience I want to have. I would say the majority of primals tend to operate much more fluidly, that it is much more reactive, and that top and bottom in a scene are going to shift and move within that scene moment by moment, breath by breath. You don't know who's going to be on top in a particular moment. Like I said, primal predator, primal prey are most definitely things, but I would not use those particular terms to describe as a default descriptor for top and bottom, because those have meaning, specific meaning, within the kink.
That is a absolutely fair assessment of what I said. So in the way you're describing it, it's actually more in the category of a resistance play, to where we're not sure who's going to win the match.
Yeah.
Take top or bottom position necessarily.
Yes. That's what I like when I talk about consensual power take. Mm-hmm. Both sides are consenting to having their power taken if the other can take it. That implies a level of resistance. That implies a level of dynamism that you don't necessarily see in more structured dynamics. It is very much a, if you can take me either through physical strength, force of personality,
Feisty wit,
whatever it is. If you can take me, you're welcome to take me. And if you can take me, then you are welcome to do any of the things that I have consented to have done to me.
In some of the more primal scenes that I've had, it has been very much that. You know, I go in, I'm a big guy, and I think that I can certainly dominate something. And I have found that somebody half my size can really switch things up on me.
I annoy a few of my other friends who identify as primal because I take the mindset that almost every primal is actually a switch. And the reason that I say that is because if you are consenting to have things happen to you, and you're also consenting to doing things to someone else, and you're in a fluid power situation where it's moving back and forth, how can you not be a switch? If you are a hardwired dominant and it is not okay for someone else to take power over you, how are you going to function in a fluid power dynamic? If you are a hard-coded submissive and you cannot raise your hand against a sir, well then, how exactly is this primal interaction fun?
Let alone look them in the eye.
It is, that dynamism is a lot of what drives what you're doing. And you have to be open to not getting what you want. You have to be open to the possibility that no matter how big and strong you are, you may not win for whatever the descriptor of winning is. And that's okay. The point is not to win. The point is to have an authentic and genuine experience with another living, breathing person, and to let that discussion that you're having with them, to let that dialogue, to let that interplay blossom and shift and move and grow how it wants to grow, as opposed to trying to force it down a particular line where it may not want to go.
The fluidity is the thing that makes sense there. And, you know, you get two people that have the, I'll use your term, the switch mindset, and it becomes a power match at that point. And the two sides work it up. You know, I've seen some resistance play scenes that are not necessarily in the primal side because they are using more, you know, human brain side. But it's certainly the same kind of dance. It's the power sliding back and forth, and one overtaking the other eventually.
Yes, though I would say that it very much mirrors resistance play, but I don't know if it would mirror as much like consensual non-consent, because this is a consensual interaction. It is a consensual shifting dynamic, as opposed to a, you're going to resist, and if I can beat your resistance, I'm going to do whatever I want to do to you. But I haven't put any of myself out there at risk. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a primal scene, I'm absolutely putting myself out there at risk. And that's kind of the difference between what you might experience on a primal mat versus what you might see in a more consensual non-consent rape play scenario or something like that. It is much more, I don't know how to put it, except it tastes different.
And I'll accept it tastes different. And you have to experience maybe both or view both types of scenes to, you know, come up with a personal conclusion on that. Certainly the heat of either of those scenes is very high. At this point, I need to go find a partner and work this thing out. But Ark, I really want to thank you for being on the show tonight to bring kind of a 101 for a primal to our listeners. It's been an informative time, and I thank you.
I appreciate you having me. On FetLife, my name is spelled ARC_ULFGRIM. If people from the cast have questions, if they want to have a dialogue with me, if there's information there, if there's things that this discussion have sparked that they want to know more, I am more than happy to open my inbox and answer any questions that anybody might have. This is a fundamental part of who I am in the kink world. And I am always happy to share something that matters this much to me with whomever might be interested in learning more.
And that link will be on the show page at kinkycast.com. Check it out. There'll be more information there about ARC. And so thank you, and we appreciate you sharing this evening.
Thank you.
You have been listening to episode 283 of the Kinky Cast. For more information about this show, go to kinkycast.com. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of all our kinky crew, I'm Max. Join us next week when we present Abduction and Interrogation with Travis, recorded at FrolicCon.